Web off our website over at progressive.org. Bush can fly into Iraq as many times as he wants, but his pilot's ability to land a plane in a war zone doesn't mean that the surge is going well. And Bush can call in his Iraqi viceroys and vassals for the obligatory photo op, but none of that changes the conditions on the ground. The LA Times reports that the additional 28,500 troops have not only failed to bridge the sectarian divides, they've also failed to substantially decrease civilian deaths, and more Iraqis are fleeing their homes now than even before the surge began. In the days ahead, as Bush once again prepares to exploit 9/11 for his Iraq war purposes, we'll be hearing a lot from him and General Petraeus on why we just have to stay this new course. Don't believe them. This is the same old course, only with marginally more troops. They can't solve the political problems that lie at the heart of the sectarian split, and they only add to the impression that this is a foreign occupation. There's a startling statistic in the New York Times. 60,000 Iraqis are now being held prisoner, more than twice the amount last year. Bush can fill Abu Ghraib to the rafters, but that still won't end this conflict. Even if he could put a hood over the head of every other Iraqi man, he wouldn't resolve the conflict. But he sure may end up trying. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
This is the Quality News Network. Five nuclear cruise missiles were mistakenly mounted under the wings of a B-52 bomber and transported from a North Dakota Air Force base to one in Louisiana last week. The Air Force says the weapons were not armed and there was never a danger to the American public. German police arrested three suspected Al-Qaeda-inspired terrorists in overnight raids following a tip accusing the men of plotting attacks against the Frankfurt Airport and the Ramstein U.S. Air Force base. Police seized 1,500 pounds of hydrogen peroxide, an ingredient in potent explosives. The men will be arraigned today. The eight Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists who were arrested in Copenhagen on Monday on suspicions of planning a bombing appeared in court today, all pleading not guilty. The suspects were under surveillance for months. And coalition forces arrested a key terrorist suspect with ties to Iran during a raid in Karbala today. President Bush is in Australia, meeting with Australian Prime Minister John Howard. The Prime Minister pledged to keep Australian forces in Iraq. The two leaders then signed a treaty granting more access to Australia to top-secret U.S. intelligence. The Washington Post reports a chief advisor to Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf says the administration is considering declaring emergency rule as Musharraf's re-election chances diminish. Under emergency rule, elections could be postponed for as long as a year and citizens' rights curtailed. In Nevada, the search continues for millionaire adventurer Steve Fawcett, who appeared while piloting a single-engine plane on Monday morning. The 63-year-old was looking for a location for his next attempt to break the land speed record. Idaho Senator Larry Craig says he's rethinking his earlier decision to resign following his guilty plea in a sex sting in a Minneapolis men's room. The veteran Republican lawmaker has hired a prominent attorney to investigate the possibility of challenging his own guilty plea. Officials in Honduras and Nicaragua say they're concerned about the effect of torrential rain brought by Hurricane Phoenix yesterday. Damages from the Category 5 storm were less than feared, but four people were killed. And Hurricane Henriette blew across the Baja Peninsula yesterday, killing seven before crossing into the Gulf of California. Arizona and New Mexico are expected to receive some rain from the storm tomorrow. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have four convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our four branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Medical researchers are warning consumers the fumes from butter-flavored microwave popcorn may be dangerous. There are already reports of lung disease from workers in factories that produce the product. Mattel is recalling more than 840,000 China-made toys contaminated by lead paint. It is the third recall in as many months for the recall for the world's largest toy company. This week it was announced that federal authorities are investigating whether Mattel responded quickly enough during its last toy recall. Apple today unveiled its much-anticipated new iPod models. The iPod Nano and iPod Classic both received facelifts, and the new iPod Touch was released with features a touchscreen and digital organizer. Apple also lowered the price of their iPhone by $200. Their stock fell 2% as a result. Yahoo will spend $300 million in cash to buy online advertising company Blue Lithium. Yahoo is attempting to challenge its competitor Google for a larger share of internet ad sales. Thousands of Manhattan taxi drivers went on strike today, protesting fare hikes and a mandatory tech updates for their cabs. The strike is scheduled to last 72 hours. Light sweet crude is trading at $75.78 a barrel. Gold is trading at $690.70 an ounce. Wall Street this hour, the Dow is down 169, NASDAQ down 26, S&P 500 down 19. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to a very special edition of the Inside Scoop. When George Bush began the war in Iraq, he said that we were fighting over there, so we didn't have to fight them here. Apparently, the logic of George Bush's war was that if we attack a country that didn't attack us, the Islamic terrorists would be so outraged they would rush to Iraq and murder our troops there, but leave the Americans that didn't volunteer to fight in Iraq, leave us alone. Well, every time I argue that that's a silly statement, I get a number of people who have said to me, you've heard my debate shows, Republicans who say, well, Mark, there hasn't been a terrorist attack on American soil since 9/11. They're not here. They're over there. Of course, that totally discounts the anthrax investigation, but it also discounts other evidence that I want to present to you today. Evidence that Islamic terrorists and white supremacist organizations are already meeting and combining and trying to attack Americans here. But it gets worse than that, because the FBI apparently has shelved any investigation into this for at least almost 2-year period in order, in fact, to take revenge against the FBI agent who made it public. I have that ex-FBI agent on the line with me today. His name is Mike German. He discovered this connection between white supremacist groups and an Islamic terrorist group, discovered that the FBI had illegally recorded some of it, pointed it out to them, and was fired because of it. And now he is advocating very strongly for a Whistleblower Protection Act. Agent Mike German, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for being here. I want to really spend the entire hour on your story, and I want to go through the details, because in this kind of story, the details do matter. Let me start with, how long were you an agent for the FBI?
16 years.
16 years. Now, in the course of your acting as an agent, you came across this connection between a white supremacist organization and an Islamic terrorist group?
Right. I actually didn't come across it. What happened was I was working in one office, and I had been doing quite a bit of undercover work in my career, particularly with domestic terrorist groups. So I received a phone call from a supervisor in the Tampa office who asked me to come and help them figure out how to make an undercover case out of a case that they had. And when I went down there, what he showed me was a meeting. In other words, that they had recorded a meeting of a white supremacist, a representative of a white supremacist group meeting with a supporter of an Islamic terrorist group in an attempt to establish operational links between the two groups.
Very interesting. Now, I want to go and get all the details. Let me start with, before Tampa contacted you, you had actually worked, gone underground, pretended to be a white supremacist in order to find out what they were doing?
Right. The first time I did that was in 1992 in Los Angeles, which was after the Rodney King riots with all the racial unrest going on.
Well, let me just say, first of all, that you're a very brave man and that I appreciate very much the work you've done. I happen to be from Nashville, Tennessee. And I recall a time when an FBI agent, much like yourself, infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan and actually discovered a plot to bomb the synagogue in Nashville. And so that saved a lot of lives, and I consider that extremely valuable work, and I just want to commend your service before we go further. Now, so you had done this work before with a number of groups, and Tampa calls you and says, hey, I think we've got something here.
Right.
And they share this recording with you.
Right, exactly. You know, when they asked me to work on the case, I went through the FBI system to look at their case file, and there was nothing in it. So I assumed, okay, something must have just happened, which is, from my experience, was a good thing that, you know, I mean, typically I got called when things were messed up. So this looked like it
was random. So this was evidence that you thought that they were on the ball and had just gotten news of this of these meetings.
Right, exactly. But when I got down there, I realized that it over a month had passed since the meeting, and that actually there was a lot of other activity that hadn't been documented at all. Which
okay, now let me ask you: in order to record a private conversation, I happen to know that under federal law, you can record a conversation if you're a party to it. Different states have different laws about. Whether it's not, it's illegal unless everybody knows it's happening. But certainly if you get a warrant, you can record anything. Did they have a warrant for this recording?
No. It was with through the consent of a cooperating witness.
Okay. So it was, in other words, it was legal under that first thing that I said. Under federal law, if one party knows it's going on, you're okay.
Exactly.
Okay. So the recording was basically legal, but there was a problem with it?
Right. It was only legal when the person consenting to the recording is in the room.
I see. And he walked out of the room, or she.
Exactly.
Okay. So there was a small portion of the recording that was illegal because no one was in the room that consented to it, and there was no warrant.
Right. And it's the type of thing that sometimes happens by accident. So having done as much undercover work as I did, I knew that there was a process that you have to follow immediately to make sure that portion of the conversation is segregated so that none of the people in the investigation get to see that, and you know, basically you can still preserve the evidentiary part of the conversation and just take away the part that was inappropriately recorded.
So in other words, 90% or more of it was appropriately recorded? Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the exact percentage, but there was a percentage that was appropriately recorded, and only a small segment was inappropriately recorded. So
the part
that could have been fixed.
Yeah, and the part that was appropriately recorded, was that sufficient evidence that you think an investigation could have been opened, a probable cause was there, maybe a warrant, maybe
further
investigation?
Absolutely. It was, you know, I mean, in my mind, when I got down there and saw it, it was the perfect operation. You know, perfect timing. You know, the two parties had just come together and were asking for, you know, mutual assistance, and it was sort of was a perfect opportunity to.
What time period are we talking about? When was this meeting?
And that was the other perfect part of it. This was in January of 2002.
So, wow! So right after September 11th.
Right. It's post September 11th. It's when, you know, supposedly the FBI had learned its lesson and was now going to make sure that every opportunity was chased down.
Now, what is on the tape that's, I mean, I assume you can tell us what's on the tape that was legally recorded. If you can't tell us things, then obviously we understand. What can you tell us was on the tape?
Well, actually, Senator Charles Grassley recently released portions of the transcript to demonstrate that the FBI and the Department of Justice Inspector General's basically their denials that it involved terrorism. He released portions of the transcript.
Okay, and you actually sent me that transcript. I don't know if you're allowed to quote from it, but I certainly am because
okay,
it's in the
great
public domain. Okay, now I understand. There are all kinds of limitations here, and I don't want you to break any of your obligations. I do have a copy of that public transcript, and in that public transcript, the white supremacist and the Islamic militant, I would call it terrorist. I don't really like the term militant. I think it's too kind. But they talk about shooting Jews, their shared admiration for Hitler, arms shipments from Iran, their desire for a civil war in the United States, their approval of suicide bombings, and assassinating pro-Israeli journalists in the United States, all the very first time they met This is what they were talking about. In one portion of the transcript, the Islamic terrorist says, quote, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend." The white supremacist agrees, and the Islamic terrorist says, quote, "Anyone willing to shoot the Jew is a friend." Senator Grassley says this does not sound like an innocent meeting between businessmen. Okay, so this is what at least has been already been released, is in the public domain. Thank you, Senator Grassley. You went down there. You heard this tape. I assume you heard more than just what I've cited. And what happened next?
Well, I explained the importance to the supervisor and the case agent of making sure that everything was documented properly, because once it went into a court of law, a defense attorney would, you know, make mincemeat out of us if things weren't properly documented. And they promised me that they would get right on that and asked me if I would do the undercover work, so I began preparations for that. But
all right, stop right there. Okay. We've got to take a break. That's the nature of radio. Folks, this story is very interesting. We're just at the beginning of it, and you'll see it's not just about the connection between these terrorist groups, but about an FBI cover-up that, frankly, is very scary for our nation. If you want to call in, I'm going to finish the interview with Mike German first, but at the end of the hour, you're welcome to call in. For now, we'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers to represent Native perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Winnebago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The government has been criticized for failing to connect the dots before September 11th. We've talked about it a lot on this program, all the evidence that was available to the Bush administration regarding the threats that would later become 9/11. Even after 9/11, there are problems. Many of us know the anthrax investigation has not been resolved. There's a whole story there, which I'll go into. There's other issues that, if there's time, I'd like to go into at the end of the hour, including murderers that the FBI has been working with as informants, arguably even sleeping with, and thefts from 9/11, actually stealing things found in the World Trade Center, where the FBI is protecting the thieves. I guess they have to, considering that Donald Rumsfeld is one of them. There's also, of course, the issue of national security letters. Basically, the FBI has been spying on American citizens. When I worked at the House Judiciary Committee, Attorney General John Ashcroft denied that this was happening. Turns out that's because the FBI was falsifying records and so just simply lying to us. So there's all kinds of problems in the FBI. Today I have a very specific story and a fascinating one, both for its individual circumstance and also for what it says about the current nature of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I'm talking with an ex-FBI agent. His name is Mike German. In my view, he is an American hero. He spent 16 years working undercover, trying to protect Americans, including going undercover in white supremacist organizations, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a matter of risking his life to help his country. And he was telling us before the break how he discovered a connection between a white supremacist organization and a Islamic terrorist group out of Tampa. He discovered that the recording was that what they said was recorded. Most of it was good. A small part of it was illegally recorded. Mike German, continue the story from there. What did you do down in Tampa?
Well, you know, once I found out that the case was being mishandled, I sort of tried to, subtly behind the scenes, just sort of let people know that there was a problem, and unfortunately nobody was willing to sort of pick up the torch and get the case on track. So meanwhile, months were passing. And
Now, is it because of this small part that was not recorded legally that was the problem?
No, at that point nobody even knew about that, or at least I didn't know about that. I guess some people in Tampa knew about it, but nobody had told me about that. So.
They just weren't pursuing the investigation. Here they know that some person in a white supremacist organization is meeting with an Islamic terrorist group, and they're just not pursuing it?
It's hard to explain how dysfunctional the FBI management is, and in order to move forward on an investigation like that, it has to go up through the chain in headquarters. And, you know, agents on the street who are trying to get work done just loathe the idea of anything that has to go back through headquarters, because there's just such a bureaucratic inertia that happens once things get back there, and this is basically the track it's taken. And I had been.
Well, here's what I don't understand. I mean, the FBI generally still has a good reputation today. People think and understand that it's there to help us. And I should say, by the way, at the outset, that the FBI is certainly not all bad. In fact, the FBI has been very helpful in a number of investigations. So I don't mean to certainly tar all of the FBI or all of the agents working out there. But
right. But
it has this reputation, Mike, about being on the ball and they're going to get these guys. Were they not interested in this domestic terrorist group forming in America?
Well, I think what you have to understand is the FBI is like two different things. There are the agents out there in the field that for the most part, vast majority of them are extraordinarily talented, extraordinarily smart people who are really hardworking and trying to do the right thing. But as an organization, it's just so mismanaged that, when the FBI agents are able to succeed, it's often despite the management. So
now, are you talking about management that is civil service management that's been there for years? Are you talking about political appointees or both?
Back to the Hoover days,
that's a long time.
Right. The way the FBI has been, the FBI was built by J. Edgar Hoover, who had the agency when it had, 15 people in it. And he built
it was spying on Martin Luther King and doing all kinds of awful
things. And he built it into that. And when he died, they've been appointing people who for the most part are federal judges and that sort of thing, who really don't, the current director, Robert Mueller, was a U.S. attorney. And, all of a sudden, you take probably an office of maybe 500, perhaps 1,000 attorneys that are employees that work there, and now you put them in charge of this 30,000-employee organization that has, people all over the world. There's just no... I can't imagine how difficult that would be to try to make that leap to organize something like that. And
let's before we get
Okay.
Yeah, before we get into the management, and I do want to get there, absolutely, let's just finish your story so that people understand what happened. So you went down to Tampa, and you saw that no one was following up on this investigation. And what did you do to try to encourage people to follow up on it?
You know, I informally contacted people at headquarters who I knew from my previous cases and said, hey, do you know about this, and is there something you can do to get this case moving? And I tried to work with another agent down in Tampa trying to get the case up and running.
And what were they telling you?
The agents out on the ground were trying, but there was just one bureaucratic problem after another, and nobody in management wanted to take the bull by the horns and say get it done. So
is this like someone goes to the management in Tampa and says, hey, we want to pursue this case, and they say, we have other priorities, or I'll get back to you, or they must say something.
I wish it was that organized. It's really that this type of case. It's going to require a lot of approvals at headquarters, and, I don't know who's there, who really likes me, who I can call up and say, hey, can you do me this favor? I mean, it's really...
Why is it a favor to enforce the law and to try to protect American citizens? That sounds like a job, not a favor.
Yeah, and if you look at, if you read through what the agent in Minneapolis who was trying to work, the Zacharias Moustawi case, one of the so-called...
Colleen Rowley.
Actually, Harry Sammet, who is the agent who worked on the case, he testified here at Congress and before the 9/11 Commission. And he was the one who was trying to get the warrant to search Moustawi's computer. And
before 9/11,
before 9/11, and
right,
he's sending these affidavits up to this guy at headquarters, who's literally taking pieces of the affidavit out before he submits them, and then saying, "Oh, it's not enough." And you can't understand that. But
wait. He's taking pieces of the affidavit out.
Right.
Explain what you're saying.
In other words,
make it clear.
He keeps telling the agent in the field that there isn't enough information here. There isn't enough to get
a warrant.
To get one of these FISA warrants, Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant. And
later
on, it was determined that he was actually removing pieces of information from the affidavit. So, again, it just shows...
So, in other words, the agent gives him 100 pieces of information.
Right.
He removes 99 of them.
He passes on fewer than 100.
Than 100 and then says there's not enough there.
Right. And, the fascinating thing about that episode is later on he was called before Congress and they asked, what is the standard that needs to be met, the evidentiary standard, to get one of these warrants? And he didn't know. He admitted
he didn't know the standard?
And that's the sort of dysfunction that still exists.
Well, is he just an incompetent boob? Is this someone who just shouldn't be in his job? I've worked as a lawyer in government. I've worked in private groups. And if someone asks me what the standard is, I look it up. It doesn't take – the FISA law, I've seen it, at least the part that's not classified, it's not a very large law. It's not that hard to get your hands around.
Right. But if you know that you're only going to be in that job handling FISA warrants for 2 years and the first 60 days are, moving in and learning where the men's room is and, where the hospital is.
Had he just gotten there, this guy?
No, I'm not really sure about that. I don't know if he's gotten there. But the agents in management are moved out about every 2 years. So you don't really have time to learn what you're doing, nor incentive, because perhaps his dream was to move on to the next job supervising motorcycle gangs,
So let's go back to Tampa here. So you find out in January 2002 about this, and you try with Tampa to get people to do something. You try all the way back in Washington headquarters to get people to do something.
Right.
And nobody does something for almost 2 years, I guess?
Well, no. This was by August. So this event happens in January. By August, things still aren't moving. And
all right, so what do you do then?
Down, and that's when I found out that a portion had been recorded illegally. This was a big problem because as we're hearing now with the NSA wiretapping, it's actually a criminal violation to record something this way.
That's the problem, by the way. Let me just say to my listeners, with the president's warrantless wiretapping program, this is exactly the thing that James Comey was talking about, where Bush sent Gonzalez to try to overrule a very sick Attorney General John Ashcroft, who said, hey, I'm not willing to go this far. There's a constitution here, and you need a warrant for these things. Just right. Just so you understand the magnitude of the problem here. All right, so then what did you do?
So when I found out about that, I was like, hey, we really need to do something about this right away. You know, number one, I had already seen a copy of the transcript, so I wanted to make sure that I hadn't already been tainted because I was going to continue working on the case. And
right.
The answer I got back from the management in Tampa was, we're just going to pretend it didn't happen.
We're just going to pretend it didn't happen.
Right.
Amazing. Folks, we got to take another break. This story will continue. There's a lot more here by my very special guest, my hero, in fact, Agent Mike German. We'll be right back right after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
What's a conversation like on Head On with Bob Kincaid? This is what it's like.
Let's go. Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means. Not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Conversation at its finest. Weeknights, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only at Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Isn't that? Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
So,
who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady?
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest today is former FBI agent Mike German. Those of you who are longtime listeners of the Inside Scoop know that I was one of the first to put Sabelle Edmonds on the air, another ex-worker for the FBI who discovered a spy in the FBI. And when she told her authorities about it, she was fired, not the spy. Again, involving Islamic terrorism. Mike German has another story about dysfunction at the FBI. He found out that a white supremacist group was working with Islamic terrorists down in Tampa. He been trying to pursue it for 7 months, and then he discovered that a small portion of the transcript of the tape was illegally recorded. He brought it to people's attention, and they said, quote, "We're going to pretend it didn't happen." How did you respond to that, Mike?
At that point I realized I have to bring this to the head of the Tampa Division, the special agent in charge, and headquarters, the assistant director for counterterrorism, to their attention.
Were you shocked to hear that? We're going to pretend it didn't happen? I mean, is that something that you'd heard before in your 16 years as an agent?
Never. I mean, I couldn't believe how he could think that would possibly work, because, of course, these subjects of the investigations, the bad guys, they knew what happened, you know?
Right. Well, not only that, but you have a tape. You have a transcript. Right. You can hear the person leaving the room. It's not only that it's against the law and falsifying evidence against the Constitution. You can't even get away with it.
Right, exactly. And that's why I was just so awestruck by it. It was like, you know, how can you even, you're not making any sense.
So you went to the head of Tampa, and that person said...
Well, I went through my chain of command in the office that I was working in and reported to them.
Fair enough.
I was gonna, and so they were the ones who contacted them, and that's when my career took a sudden detour.
Well, no, let's talk about that. Was your chain of command supportive of what you were saying? Hey, we have to follow the law. They contacted Tampa. Was your chain of command at least supportive of you, or maybe
yes,
not?
They were initially. Once it was clear that headquarters wasn't going to support me, they certainly didn't stick out their neck to help me.
Okay, so you went through your chain of command to get to Tampa to do the right thing. Tampa says, in effect, no, and it all goes to the headquarters in Washington, D.C.,
right.
And headquarters says no.
Headquarters said, well, basically what headquarters has said is, okay, Mike Sherman has alleged that you've done something wrong, so I want you to investigate yourself and tell us what happened. So the Tampa Division did an investigation of themselves, and surprisingly...
And they come... They say that they haven't done anything wrong.
Exactly. And what they did is they started immediately backdating records to make it look like they had done all the appropriate things before my complaint. Actually started creating fraudulent documents and falsified documents. And then issued a so-called investigation report to headquarters saying this meeting was never recorded. There was no illegal recording because the meeting wasn't recorded. There's no tape. There's no transcript. The meeting didn't happen. This is all made up. And
wow. And, of course, you'd heard it with your own ears.
I had the transcript.
You had the transcript.
Right.
And they're saying it didn't happen.
Yes.
So you're a liar, even though you've got the smoking gun in your possession.
Right. And they've written reports of what happened in the meeting that contradict the transcript. So they've written false reports to make it look like nothing happened.
So the false reports say that the white supremacists and the Islamic terrorists didn't even discuss terrorism.
Right. Right. That, you know, basically they sort of, you know, sat next to each other on a bus and, you know, they
would. So what happened to you in your career?
Well, I was kicked off of that case and was told I would never work undercover again. Was told that I would never participate in any undercover training again, and basically my life got very quiet after that, and 80% of my workload dropped, and I spent a lot of time just sitting in an office twiddling my thumbs, waiting for the phone to ring to tell me that, okay, you know, we've read the transcript now, you're right, they're wrong, you know, let's rescue your career. And unfortunately that never happened.
Well, I'm sure you made several copies of this transcript and sent them to all kinds of people saying, I'm telling the truth, they're lying.
Right. I mean, that was the amazing thing. I came up to headquarters, met with the FBI's Office of Professional Responsibility and the Department of Justice Inspector General, and had the memo that said the meeting wasn't recorded and didn't happen in the way it was described by Mike German, and a copy of the transcript. And I said, what are you going
to do? And the person that you went to had to admit you were right, right?
They were very animated and recognized that there was a big problem. Unbeknownst to me, they immediately called Tampa and let them change their report and issue.
Now, wait a minute. Okay, so let's get this straight. So You tell Tampa there's a problem. They say there's no problem, there's no transcript, there's no meeting. They didn't discuss terrorism. We're backdating stuff. We're falsifying stuff. And Mike German, you're in effect fired. You can't do undercover work, even though you've done it for 16 years. You go into your supervisor and you say, here's the transcript, Tampa's lying. And the supervisor, instead of protecting you, calls Tampa and lets them change their story again.
Right. Actually, it wasn't my supervisor. This was here at headquarters in Washington, D.C. So I came directly to the FBI and the Department of Justice Inspector General's office. So they were the ones who called.
These are headquarters. These are the political appointees.
These are actually career players. But their job is to do the internal investigation. And here they are participating in the cover-up. I mean, it was shocking to me.
Wow. So then what happened?
The FBI's inspection division opened an investigation. And I found out about it. Sort of by accident, and then when I went to talk to them about it, they said, well, you know, we're going to look at this whole thing, and by the way, we're investigating you as well.
For what?
Well, they threw out a couple of allegations that I had done some inappropriate travel and had misspent case funds.
In other words, you might have gotten a muffin on the airplane that you didn't charge the right
group. It was less than $100 what they were talking about.
Less than $100, exactly. So they can always find some expense report where, you know, you missed it.
Right,
so
and
they're
ultimately
investigating
they determined
you.
That I didn't. They couldn't find that I had done anything wrong, but that was I don't think it was necessarily to find that I had done something wrong, but just let me know that they're going to start combing through everything to try to find something against me.
So is this when you finally went to Senator Grassley?
Nope. I still had faith in the system. This is now over a year after the original event. But the Department of Justice Inspector General told me that his investigators told me that they had to wait for the FBI to finish everything they were going to do before they could start. So I had faith that they would do that. The FBI Inspection Division dragged their feet, didn't come around to actually finishing up until November, December of 2003. So
2003, so we're almost 2 years later.
Right. And that report cleared everybody and said, you know, no harm, no foul, no terrorism case missed, no problem.
Did that report basically say Mike German's a liar?
That report actually is classified, so I can't say what it says, but what I was told about it was that, you know, basically it was all done and the IG wouldn't follow through with any investigation.
So there was no problem, no one did anything wrong, and what happened to you? So is this when you went to Senator Grassley?
No, actually I still had a little faith. And I was asked to come teach at Quantico for a while they figured out what was going wrong and would try to get things back on track. And the IG, a month later, then reversed itself and said they would open an investigation. So I said, okay, I'll stick around and see what happens. And that was in January of 2004. And I waited a couple of months, and in April of 2004, I called to see what was happening with the investigation and was told they hadn't started the investigation yet and that they would need to interview me again.
Meanwhile, this is 2 years and 3 months after a known white supremacist is working with a known Islamic terrorist to work together to kill people in America.
They didn't get that specific.
We don't know because there was no investigation. This was their first meeting. Right. I mean, who knows what they were up to now?
Right. So at that point is when I realized that the FBI and the Department of Justice weren't interested in moving forward and weren't trying to really solve the problems, and I decided that I would go to Senator Grassley and let him know. So I did that
okay.
And resigned.
So you went to Senator Grassley and you did resign. Now, the upshot of it, by the way, is Senator Grassley, Republican of Iowa, has been very good on this case. He has had investigators look into it. He has been very supportive of Mike German. But Mike German, of course, has been out of a job since then. And this to me is a very interesting case because it's very clear about whistleblowing. Whistleblowing is when you see that your boss is breaking the law and you report your boss. The idea is you should be protected because you're the good guy. You told the truth. Your boss is the bad guy. And whistleblowers are supposed to be protected under the law. But Mike You weren't, were you?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. I mean, what surprised me about it initially was how brazen they were about it. That there wasn't any attempt to hide what they were doing. That, you know, immediately I was taken off a case and immediately told I would never work undercover again. A second undercover case that I was assigned to work on, they would never approve because my name was on it. It was ridiculous. What it told me is that this is accepted at high levels of the FBI.
Well, clearly it happens all the time. Now, I've talked about Sybil Edmonds' case. She had a lawsuit when she was, in effect, fired for telling the truth about a spy in the FBI. And that case went up to the Court of Appeals, which said, we're not going to study whether or not anything Sybil Edmonds says is true. We're not even going to read her complaint. This is all too secretive. The government says it's too secretive to even have a court adjudicate it. So we're going to throw it out. No rights to Sybil Edmonds. So I reported that when it happened. Mike, have you begun a lawsuit? Not that there's any great hope, given the case I just cited, but have you tried suing?
No.
Okay.
There's this strange process that, first of all, there wasn't any point in suing because there's no protections for an FBI agent. The Whistleblower Protection Act exempts FBI agents and CIA agents and other national security agency personnel, so there's no law protecting.
So you have no right to do whistleblowing even when your superiors are breaking the law.
Right.
And we wonder how Abu Ghraib happened. Folks, here now's your chance to call in during the break. We have to take one last break. Here's your chance to ask questions of Mike German. Anything you want to ask about his case, if it's confidential and he can't tell you, I'm sure he will say that. But please call in 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Americans still ask, how did we miss the pre-9/11 intelligence? Republicans and the president say, sorry, we thought Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. They didn't. It was all an intelligence failure. People are saying, what is it about our agents on the ground that are getting the intelligence wrong? Turns out, folks, it's not our agents. It's the management over our agents. In former agent, FBI agent Mike German's story, He tried to present material that could protect Americans from a white supremacist group that's connecting with an Islamic terrorist group, and instead he gets falsification of documents, pretending it didn't happen, denying there is any terrorism in the discussion, denying there is any recording, when he had the smoking gun in his hand. 877-4-HEAD on. Dave from California, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mike,
Dave,
I think...
there.
Yes, can you hear me?
Go ahead. I hear you fine. Go ahead.
Mike, I don't want to further shatter your faith in government, but I have an insight that I've learned firsthand. Your agency was going through some heavy changes and still is, because what happened is the most corrupt administration ever to be in the history of this planet took over the office, and they had all kinds of criminal plans, and there was no place for a Mike, a Sabell, any honest agent that would say, no, I'm not going to do it that way, I'm going to report it. That you would have been persona non grata from the get-go. I don't know if you share any of my concerns about how corrupt our present government is, but imagine them having an honest FBI agency investigating reality.
Well, Dave, let me ask you, and that's obviously a very dangerous political question for you, Mike, but, I mean, how far up in the chain of command do you think this corruption goes? Does it go all the way up to FBI Director Mueller, or, as Dave suggests, even higher?
Well, when I wasn't getting any help after reporting it to the Assistant Director for Counterterrorism, I reported it directly to Robert Mueller, and that's when things really started to get bad for me, so... Clearly, he knew about it early on in January of 2003.
Well, this is interesting. They didn't kick you off the case until after.
Oh no,
the director...
I was already kicked off the case. But as
you were kicked
as
off.
Far as the retaliatory investigations and the prevention from working again, that all happened after I told the director what was happening.
Amazing. So after you go to the very top, to the director of FBI, that's when they start retaliating against you. Amazing stuff. So. Is it that everyone fears Director Mueller? People want to know, why are people all throughout ignoring this? It's interesting because you said at the very beginning your chain of command was supportive. It sure sounds like, you know, Dave is right, that this is a top-down problem, that this is a director that's acting much in the tradition of J. Edgar Hoover. Is that fair?
You know, it's a management system that's designed to protect managers, whether they're competent or not. So... No matter what, if an agent is reporting a misconduct of a manager, they're going to crush him to make sure that no agents can report on their manager. And there's a solidarity that exists that allows them to do that, that it would allow... I mean, I'm sitting in an interview with an FBI inspector who's reading this report written by the Tampa Division that says the meeting never happened, and I have the transcript in my hand. And I'm saying, you know, this is something you need to investigate. And he's saying, well, you know, there's an allegation that you spent $50 inappropriately, and that's what we look at.
This is Orwellian, is what it is.
It was, absolutely. I mean, to where, you know, when they corrected that it had been recorded, they were still adamant that no terrorism is discussed. And I'm flipping through the transcript showing those portions that Grassley talks about and saying, you know, what don't you see?
Now, one of the things I think that I'd be remiss if I didn't mention is that there is a bill in Congress that the Democrats have already pushed through the House. It's already passed the House of Representatives. In fact, it should be fair to say not only did virtually every Democrat vote for it, but half the Republicans voted for it, too. It's H.R. 985. It's the Whistleblowers Protection Act. Tell me, Mike, what would this act do?
Well, it would remove the exemption for FBI agents, the National Security Agency, and CIA employees, so that people in these national security agencies would have some protection.
So in other words, if you report on your boss who's breaking the law, you don't get retaliated against.
Well, you can get retaliated against, but at least you have some way of getting some protection for that, and it you know, makes it much harder for them to retaliate against you and gives you avenues to get redress. I mean, in my case, there simply were no avenues to get help. Nobody would stop what was happening.
Now, this bill, H.R. 985, as I say, has already passed the House of Representatives. There's been very little discussion of it. Frankly, there's been very little news about it. What are the bill's prospects in the Senate?
Well, there's a different bill in the Senate. I don't have the number right at my fingertips here. But you know, and they have different elements. I mean, I think the one thing that everybody has to do in putting these bills together is to make sure that whichever, you know, whether you're taking things from the Senate bill or from the House bill in conference trying to make the ultimate law, that whatever the best, highest level of protection you can give these agents in these national security agencies, they need to have the highest level of protection. You know, it's amazing to think that some accountant in some company out there has more protection than a CIA agent or an FBI agent does. So
now, Mike German, I assume this shouldn't be a partisan issue. Senator Grassley is a Republican.
Right.
The Democrats that control the House, they've already passed the bill. I would think that this is the kind of thing you could get strong bipartisan support on in the Senate, well beyond the 60 filibuster number, right?
You would think that, and hopefully it will maintain a lot of support. You know, the administration has already threatened to veto. So
they threatened to veto it.
Right.
So the administration has said, in effect, that if an FBI agent reports lawlessness in the management, we want to make sure they're punished. That's
right.
What they're saying? How are they defending a veto threat?
Well, you know, the idea is that if these agents are allowed to speak out about whistleblowing issues, then, you know, national secrets will be out. But what they're not saying is that what is being reported by these whistleblowers is threats to our national security.
I mean, the amazing thing is that in all of this, frankly, beyond your career, although I certainly feel for you and I think you're a real hero in this, there are connections between Islamic terrorist groups and white supremacists in the United States that are not being investigated because certain managers, all the way up apparently to the director of the FBI, want to protect themselves.
Right.
Is that fair?
That is fair. That the managers are more interested in protecting their careers than doing what they're paid to do, which is protect national security.
There's so many problems in the FBI, folks. I mean, one of the things that's always been talked about, frankly, since I worked on the department overseeing Homeland Security in Congress when I was there, and there were huge computer problems. They had several different systems. They couldn't talk to each other. They couldn't investigate computer crimes here at a time when Al-Qaeda is using the internet and email is vital to sift through. Have they fixed some of these computer problems at least, Mike?
Well, not according to the reports. I mean, they're still talking about being years away from having a functioning computer system. You know, and you saw the National Security Letter report that the IG did about how the FBI has mishandled their authorities in that area, and that they were not keeping records of how they were using this, and don't even know how many of these letters they've issued, and whether they were appropriately issued or not. So it doesn't appear that they've been prepared.
The amazing thing to me is, you know, we have the Downing Street memo. They fixed the facts around the intelligence, and we have a ton of evidence that I've brought forth, Richard Clark has brought forth, Paul O'Neill has brought forth, certainly I'm not the only one, that in essence there would be a flood of information, and people like Dick Cheney would pick out one tiny thing that supports him and reject tens of thousands of other pieces of data that don't support his theory, what he wanted to do. And then what happens at the end of the day is the president blames the intelligence. They blame George Tenet, CIA, for allowing him to lie to the American people about the nuclear stuff that Saddam Hussein was supposed to be getting from Niger. They blame the intelligence agencies for messing up weapons of mass destruction. Oh, they're always blaming the agents. And what we see is when the agents try to do their job, they get stopped.
Right.
I don't know if you have a comment on that. That's me just sort of going off. But is that fair?
Yeah, it is fair. And I mean, in this case, you know, just the fact that these two groups are willing to work together is something the intelligence community at large should know about. And the FBI has been denying it for 4 years.
So they continue to deny that Islamic terrorists are trying to work with white supremacist organizations.
They were denying that right up until Grassley made the transcript public. So we'll see what their response is now.
I'm sure their response will be, how dare you, Grassley, for making the transcript public, and we're going to try to go after you, I guess. Isn't that the way they do things?
Well, they released the transcript to his office unclassified, and it was never classified. So, you know, they don't really have much to go after him about.
in terms of hope for the future, and I try to leave on an optimistic note, it's hard in this story. One hope, I assume, is that you're asking everyone who's listening to this broadcast to call their member of Congress, call their senator, and to pass the Whistleblowers Protection Act.
That's certainly a first step. And then just, you know, implore Congress to get very aggressive in their oversight. You know, the National Security Letter Report is a peek behind the curtain, but all these programs that are run secretly have those same problems, and it's really up to Congress and the American public to find out what's going on, because it's their right to know how these agencies are operated.
And let me just suggest this. In hindsight, Mike German, maybe an agent who discovers wrongdoing should not go to their boss, should not go to Director Mueller, but should go directly to members of Congress who should protect their identity so they won't be retaliated against. Is that the message for agents at this point? Don't trust your bosses. Go to Congress. They're the only ones that will protect you.
Certainly I wish I had gone to Congress earlier. I mean, I think I probably would have gotten better protection if I'd gone to Congress earlier.
It's an amazing story. Mike German, in my view, you are an American hero. I think you will be vindicated, and I'm very honored to have you here on the Inside Scoop. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
That's it for the Inside Scoop. I hope you've enjoyed this very special show. Tune in next week for more of the Inside Scoop.
Have people of a certain age have their own horror of that kind of thing, because we remember the collapse of the Silver Bridge.
This is the Quality News Network. Five nuclear cruise missiles were mistakenly mounted under the wings of a B-52 bomber and transported from a North Dakota Air Force base to one in Louisiana last week. The Air Force says there was never a danger to the American public. German police arrested three suspected Al-Qaeda-inspired terrorists in overnight raids following a tip accusing the men of plotting attacks on the Frankfurt Airport and the Ramstein U.S. Air Force base. Police seized 1,500 pounds of hydrogen peroxide, an ingredient in potent explosives. The men will be arraigned today. The eight Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists who were arrested in Copenhagen on Monday on suspicions of planning a bombing appeared in court today, all pleading not guilty. The suspects have been under surveillance for months now. President Bush is in Australia today, meeting with Prime Minister John Howard. The Prime Minister pledged to keep Australian forces in Iraq.